Hello, this is Ian Bowen, and you are listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. What if it was you?
Hi everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast number 137. Today we're going to be talking about Teen Wolf season 6 episode 5, Radio Silence. Natalie is here with me today.
Finally.
A little bit of a struggle getting this episode together, but we are here and we are going to do it.
I'm in the UK, not at home, so in the UK for Christmas. And I was like, Karen, you might have to find someone else to record with, like get a guest on instead of me if I'm traveling. And then she saw the episode and she was like, I refuse to do it with anyone except you. And I was like, okay, what's happened? That's such a big deal. And then I finally saw it and I sort of understand why she's so demanding. I need you to tell me, like, you know, when we talk about the episode, I need you to tell me why you were so determined to have, I mean, I conceptually understand, but I want to hear in your words, like, why you were so needy about me being on this episode.
I mean, basically all of it, but when we get to certain moments, I'll try to remember to bring it up, because there were some moments that I was just like, Nat is gonna die. She must be on this episode.
Wow. Fair enough. Good, good.
As usual, you can contact us on Twitter and Instagram at natwpodcast, at Gmail, at natwpodcast@gmail.com, and our Tumblr, which is noteanotherteenwolfpodcast.com, and Facebook, also natwpodcast.
Yeah, we've got 50 likes on Facebook now. I was really impressed.
You have to start posting some things over there soon.
I will. I'm not at my hard drive at the moment. But everyone's got to send in stuff. I don't know. Facebook's hard. It's really, really difficult. But yes, we have 50 people on there now, so we'll start posting over there. Wish there was a way to automatically get the episodes to post there, like so when they posted, they instantly appeared. But I'll work that out. Yeah, 137 episodes. I saw like the other day, like a Muggle cast come out that was like 300 and something, and I'm like, we have almost half the amount of episodes as Muggle cast, and they are very old. I don't know a better word for it than that, but old. They're
established?
Yeah. And I still feel like we're fake, but, you know, whatever. Let's carry on, shall we?
Yeah, so let's jump into our quotes right now. Do you want to go first?
Yes, fine. So mine is when Peter and Stiles are, you know, hustling around the train station, you know, having their whatever it is that they're doing, the attack going down there, and Stiles saves Peter and then swings by to hiss at him, in case you're keeping count, that's twice I've saved your life today. And I was like, I was just overcome with how much in any other movie this would be like a sexy flirtation, basically, you know, like that this would be kind of like a Black Widow and Hawkeye moment, you know, type thing or something like that. Like it would be like a moment where, you know, two vaguely antagonistic people who are attracted to each other but on the same side are like, haha, I've got one up on you by saving you and it's all sexy, which is an exact accurate description of what happened in this episode as well. But, you know, I'm not sure that's what they were going for, but it sure is how I took it.
No, I felt that too.
Look, if people are not into Peter and Stiles as a duo and their chemistry, which I find very interesting, you might want to opt out of this episode because we ain't going to have anything negative to say about it. And I feel like it's something that bothers some people, like that they're like, no, that's an abusive, terrible ship, and it probably is, but oh well.
Okay, so my quote for this week, actually I do have two. The main one was Styles, between Styles and Peter was like, "See what?" because he couldn't remember the Ghost Riders. And Styles just goes, "The horses, the hogshead businessmen with magically dissolving ropes." And just, I love the way that Styles always comes up with the strangest ways to describe things, especially the supernatural.
Yeah, I love that he's so bossy.
That too. And then the other one, I mean, shout out to Malia again, of course, when she's between the guy who's picking up the Jeep and she takes a part of his truck and just breaks it. And she just she holds it out to him and goes, "Your truck's broke." And the smile on her face.
Oh, after. She's so crazy. It's so good.
Great. All right, so let's jump into this episode because there's a fair amount to dig through, I think. Of course, this is when Styles finally returns and we finally get to see the other side of the situation. So we're out of Beacon Hills and in the train station now. And first off, I recognize the doctor lady from Lydia's vision early on in the season. So yes, Lydia's visions were of the people who were taken, which we guessed, but definitely didn't know for sure. So that's kind of nice to know that we were right there.
Yeah, yeah. So was the old lady is there as well, the one she saw in the Stilinski household? Was that the same old lady that we saw there later?
Yes.
Yes, and the doctor was obviously quite recognizable. And yeah, so they're all sort of flickering into the world in some way.
Yes.
Or at least to Lydia.
Which is interesting. I wonder if they're actively doing that, subconsciously doing that, or if it's just Lydia's powers, like, manifesting them in some way and they're unaware of it. Because that's pretty interesting. And they're all sort of catatonic, except for Styles. Styles immediately starts asking a lot of questions. Why do you think he's so aware when everybody else isn't?
Is it because he's the newest? Is he the newest?
He is the newest, but I don't think that necessarily means...
Well, I don't know, and it's... I don't know if it's like people who are aware of the supernatural, because Peter was, you know, when we get to Peter, he was, you know, he's obviously aware of the supernatural and he was still affected, so...
Yeah.
Maybe it's just a certain personality type.
That's, yeah, I kind of wondered if perhaps it's because Styles has people on the other side that he is connected to. Because, and I really want to talk about this later, but Peter is sort of lonely. Nobody really cares about him. The old lady, she said she was going to go visit her grandchildren, and often with, you know, older people, sometimes their family kind of forgets about them, or the relationship isn't that solid, and if they have to be taken care of, then, you know, that feels more like a burden than something that the kids want to do or the grandkids want to do. So I was thinking, you know, we don't know everybody's story, but it's possible that because of the pack and because of Styles' importance to the pack, maybe he's allowed to sort of hang on to reality better than the others are.
I really don't know. Because obviously, you know, we'll get to it in a moment. He's not the only one that's at least aware of that this situation is weird, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've never seen that guy before in our lives, so... Yeah.
Another thing that they mentioned in this episode was that they're at train station number 137. Do you think this is significant, or do you think that's just a number?
I don't know. Someone else earlier in the season asked if they were, like, if it was significant that they zoomed in on Stiles' locker number a lot, which I didn't notice particularly. I mean, I noticed they did it, but don't remember what it was. And so now I'm wondering in general if you know, the various numbers are significant or if it just had to be a number, if you know what I mean. Just any old number. Because it's a bit of a funny thing. It's not – that's not what you call a train station, is it? You know, like you don't call it, oh, I'm at station 137. You know, you don't say that. Like, you know, they're not really numbered like that. Bus stops are sometimes, but not train stations. Like, so clearly this train station doesn't have a name, like a place name, and that is quite unusual, obviously. So I don't know that. I don't know if the number in and of itself is specific, but the fact that it is a number is significant, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, true. We just have to keep putting the pieces together as we go along. So the Ghost Riders come in now, and once again we hear somebody over the speaker. Once again we hear the following stops have been canceled, and the riders come in and drop off their new victims. Which is whatever. The importance of this scene is that Peter shows up. Peter finds Stiles, and he just says, "It had to be you." He's like so annoyed, but also like
there's literally one of my favorite love songs of all times is called "It Had to Be You."
Really?
By a band called Motion City Soundtrack, ironically, who I heavily associate with Stiles. There's another song by them called "Better Open the Door," which I really heavily associate with Stiles. So they have a love song called "It Had to Be You," and it just makes me laugh hysterically that this happened. Basically, it's just, I mean, it's not subtle, is it? It is what it is. It's like, you know, why did it have to be you, Peter? Tell me why it had to be you. Were you waiting for him your whole life? Is that what it was?
Maybe.
God, people are gonna be so mad at me. Look, sometimes people who act on screen together just have really good chemistry, whatever that may be. And these two actors and characters have always had extremely interesting chemistry and an extremely kind of sick curiosity in each other that I find very, very appealing to look into. So, yeah, sorry. But, yeah, he remembers Stiles. He remembers his life. He remembers, you know, Malia, and, you know, he knows that Beacon Hills exists, but he just thinks it's normal that he's at a train station, you know. Like, yeah. It's not like they forget their outside world at all. They don't forget the outside world in the same way that the outside world forgets them. You know, he knows Stiles. He knows his past and all of that kind of stuff. But he's definitely in this moment of stasis where, you know, he's like, duh, I'm at the train station. Like, and then, you know, it's not until they're kind of shaken out of it that they're like, that's not normal.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like, I have a feeling this may have to do with his lack of connection to the real world, perhaps. But I definitely want to talk about that later, because there were some lines specifically that I was like, Peter is so sad and alone. It was kind of hard to watch. But we see his escape. We see his escape from Eichenhaus. He's in his cell. He's drawing that revenge symbol on the floor. So, like, clearly he's pissed. And I just have to pause, because we see Peter scruffy with ruffled hair, not perfectly gelled into place. How did you feel about it?
Good. I felt good about it. It wasn't like, oh my god, so, you know, hot or anything, but it was so fluffy, and I was like, I feel like they're really trying to humanize him, and I really found that whole Eichenhaus throwback really interesting, like the, because this is a callback to the time when they were breaking out Lydia, when Kira and Malia, you know, shut down the ward, so we never saw Peter at the time, but we're seeing him now, you know, at that time. But yeah, I don't know, I felt sorry for him, like with him screaming, and like his really intense revenge symbol that was like double revenge, triple revenge, like 5,000 times revenge because his swirl was so big. And I feel good about what they're doing with the character. It's what I wanted for him, to not be evil, basically, and to, I think that he has been incredibly gross in the past. And in television, especially in genre television where there's a high body count and stuff like that, you know, the stuff that people get forgiven for and are able to come out the other side as like a hero of the show is stuff that like you would never forgive someone for in real life, if you know what I mean. You would be like, deal breaker, go away forever. If someone was like, murdered your family or, you know, I don't know, whatever. But Peter is, number one, he never actually did that much damage. He just tried to kill them all but didn't manage it. He was kind of, there was the whole benefactor thing, but it was while he was literally insane. He had a lot of failed plots, basically. And his weird, like, attempted grooming of Derek as a child was also very weird. I'm getting a bit off track. Point is, I think that they're trying to, you know, have him go out a hero and reluctantly be included in the end. And I think that the Eichenhaus portrayal is a part of that, that we want to see him and feel sorry for him. And I think that, you know, there are things that, you know, in the real world would never be forgiven, but in genre television, like, people are able to kind of bounce back from and be like, yeah, I'm a hero at the end. And I think that that is what's going to happen with him. And I've seen some, you know, differing opinions online. I've seen people being like, no, he's clearly behind all the evil. He's the mastermind. He's evil and all of that. And I was just like, I don't know how you're getting that. If that's what ends up happening, I mean, more power to them for the element of surprise, but I will be shocked and possibly not shocked in a good way if that is what's happening. I feel like that's not a thing. I don't think Peter is the big bad here.
We'll reserve that for Deaton, right?
Yeah, always. you know, if Deaton's the big bad, I'll be delighted. Shocked and delighted.
Yeah, but, shocked in a good way. Yeah. I agree, like, Peter has definitely done some gross things in the past, especially when it comes to Lydia. However,
yes.
I am very interested in seeing him become a better person. And I think Peter is always going to be Peter, and I think he's always going to be very cunning and kind of work toward his own end. But I also think he has the potential to learn to live in a pack, and that is something that I'm very interested in seeing. I mean, as long as we get more deep V-necks, then, like, I'm fine with whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't seem like they're going to, going to backpedal him in any way. Like, he has no reason to try and screw them over, especially since Malia, and especially since we discovered he was the lesser of two evils with Malia's parents, like, that he was also, like, you know, that Malia's backstory with the Desert Wolf being whatever kind of psychopath she was for whatever reason. We don't know how they met or why that happened or anything like that, but, you know, Talia took the memory from him as well because they were both in danger, like Malia and him. She was hiding the baby from the Desert Wolf, and I don't think Peter was in, like, cahoots with the Desert Wolf. Like, you know, I don't think he was a victim either, like, but it was clearly a bad decision. So if he's the worst of two evils with Malia's parents and now he's, like, doing stuff because he cares about, like, what happens to them, I don't think they're going to, like, backpedal into, like, I'm plotting against you. He might just be, like, annoying and critical and grumpy, which is fine. Like,
which
as always.
Which is why we like Peter.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But we see he does escape during the lockdown, which took place 3 months ago, and this is when the pack was breaking out Lydia. And he ended up escaping.
So that was 3 months ago that they had that, you know, was that 5B? That was the middle of 5B, the breaking out of Eichenhaus?
It might have been, was it earlier than that? No, I think you're right. I think it was the middle of 5B.
Yeah.
Because it was take a while for them to, like, catch up to the current time, because we had, like, the two timelines.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so that was only meant to be 3 months ago, I guess, at the end of, like, the last school year, and now we've had the summer, or...
Yeah.
I don't know, something.
Yeah. So I just... You know, first of all...
No, because 5B was the start of senior year. Anyway, there was something. Time has passed, but yes. Not that much. Certainly not as much as it did in the real world while we were waiting this fucking season to start airing. Sorry, but it's true.
Very true. First of all, I really like that they threw in, like, how long ago that was, because it helps give us a timeline, which is something we sometimes struggle with regarding Teen Wolf. So I like that they were definitively, like, 3 months Peter has been missing and forgotten. But also, I really enjoyed the flashbacks here, too, and Peter's connection to them, which, like, we'll get into a little bit later regarding Malia. But it's just, like, that information that they're providing us, again, is, like, really helpful to kind of keep everything on track. But we do see him escape. And he's about ready to hijack a car, I guess, and a rider comes and shoots him. But why? Like, we still don't know why these ghost riders are targeting who they're targeting.
Yeah, is it just, like, right time, right place? Or is it really, like, they're going after people who could be a threat to them? Or maybe it's people that they want to use. Maybe they're taking the people to build a magical new society, you know, of super geniuses. Or maybe they, you know, either there are it's either totally incidental, or it's people who could be a threat to them in the real world, or it's actually people that they value and want for some reason, like, we're going to build a new society or something. I'm being a bit overdramatic, but... they want to use them as a resource.
Yeah.
And Peter and Stiles are both, like, the smartest people in the show, but they haven't targeted Lydia, but maybe she's safe, you know. Maybe she's not on the cards because of her magicalness.
Yeah, I mean, we saw in the trailer that it seems like perhaps the Ghost Riders are afraid of her, so, like, that's going to be interesting when we get there.
Yeah.
But this train station is not real, if you haven't guessed. That was kind of obvious to begin with, but it's not real. All the doors are on a loop, which was pretty funny, gives us a little more of that physical comedy from Stiles, and it was ridiculous, and I was like, dude, just give up already, but it was funny nonetheless.
Yeah, so it's just like a concept, I guess, or it's something that, you know, it's just a place... I guess it looks the same to everyone, but yeah, it's just a conceptual place where they're being stashed. Yeah. It may or may not be, you know, a physical location in another universe, or it may, it's certainly not just like a random place in the world. Right. But it's either a conceptual, like, location in this other universe, or it's a real location in this other universe, but yeah, it's tons of fun.
Yeah.
I still feel, like, very Matrixy about all of this. I feel like that it's all, like, not visions, but, like, I feel like Matrix, Inception, that kind of, like, I don't know the right word for it, but, like construct of reality.
Like an illusion?
Yeah, kind of. But then I don't know whether, like, are these guys, like, if these guys, like, are they physical, are Stiles and Peter and everyone there, is it their physical bodies? Have they been physically taken? Because we see the man get brought in on the horse and, you know, dumped there, like, here's another one. So are these physically real or not? Once they've been taken into the other universe.
I want to say yes, just because, like, we know the people have been taken from Earth. We see them go through a portal. So it stands to reason that, like, this place is real in the sense that, like, it is physical. It's not really in Beacon Hills, and it's not the Beacon Hills train station, but I think that it is... a place, and maybe it's even the illusion of a place, and, you know, it could change if the Ghost Riders want it to change, but I still think they have physically been removed from our world to the real world and physically put into another world or dimension.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, sure, why not?
And it is interesting how this world or dimension affects everybody, because we see pretty much everybody's catatonic. They're just totally fine sitting there. And it must be the effect that the Ghost Riders have on them. But there's one kid who's not. And he's been there for a little while. And I just wonder, again, like, why are some people content to forget and to just sit there versus people who start asking questions? I mean, we don't know anything about the background on this kid, so I don't think we can connect it to any specific reason like Styles, especially because this kid ends up dying, and, you know, that's kind of the end of that. But do you have any theories?
Not at all. Like, I don't know if this was literally just like, this is convenient, we need to, you know, have someone else test the thing, so we need to get someone else involved. Yeah. Because it was pretty easy for Styles to get Peter on board once he shook Peter out of the catatonia. You know, once he was like, dude, focus, he was like, oh, yeah, okay. But I guess no one was doing that to all of the other people there. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, Peter and Styles had the reminder of each other that they knew each other. But this kid, I don't know, was he maybe the newest after Styles, or is it something like that, you know, if you've, as I said, like a certain personality type, or if you've been through a certain something, you know, you're immune? I don't know. I really don't. I don't know if this was just convenience or if there was a reason.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see it just being convenient because they did need to have a third person to show, like, how that portal works and everything and
yeah.
the dangers of it. But in terms of trying to work it into the narrative, like, either he has a strong connection to the outside world where he can remember what it was like, or it is just his personality, and having a strong personality or an analytical mind, you know, means that you can remember. I mean, of course, Peter didn't remember that easily, but once he did, he was fully
on. It might... I'll tell you what it might be. It might be that if you are aware of what the Ghost Riders are, because once Styles was like, dude, don't you remember? Like, the Ghost Riders, and Peter's like, the Ghost Riders? The Wild Hunt, what have they got to do with it? And then once they start talking about it, like, Peter is on board and aware of the trickery, you know, what's going on. So maybe it's like people who are aware of what's happened to them are aware of what's going on.
Yeah. I still think it's strange that Peter forgot for a time. Like, he knew who the Ghost Riders were beforehand. He saw the man who shot him. I think that he'd put two and two together, although not necessarily, I suppose.
Yeah, he might not have known what that guy was, like, when he got shot at all. Like, yeah. He might have never seen the Ghost Riders before. He just conceptually knew about them because the Hales are nerds. But I don't know. That's my only real theory, is that that if you are actually aware of it, then... if you're actually aware of it, then you are more, like, aware of what's going on, as opposed to people having no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I really like how they've set up this train station and how it all works, because the kid shows them the tunnel and says, this is where the Ghost Riders come in and out of. The answer to escaping is down here. And neither Peter nor Styles can cross that threshold, and Peter makes Styles push him across the line and then pulls Styles in after him. And once they do that, they have no problem crossing. But I just like the idea that whatever world we're in, whatever setup this is, they've put into place these guarantees that the people can't escape. Like, they don't feel like they can cross that threshold. They don't, you know, they if they try to open a door and go through it, it just sends them back to the same place. And it kind of makes them lose their mind, and it kind of makes them more complacent to just sit there and accept what is going on around them.
I don't know. It's, I mean, it just makes me wonder how many people have bothered, you know, because the kid is like, you tried all the doors, you know. Clearly not everyone gets in and tries all the doors. It's not like you get there and everyone starts bashing on the doors and then sits down and eventually calms down. Some people never try getting out. And so, I don't know, are they drugging the air? Like, what? I really don't know. I do enjoy the, you know, the Styles and Peter show, obviously, so that's what I'm most focused on. But yeah, I don't know what keeps the masses quiet, basically.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see if we actually get answers or if it's just going to be this mysterious place that we kind of have to
decide. Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, that happened, and yeah, it was all, you know, we just needed to show Styles and Peter. There's no real explanation of, yeah, like, everyone else. You know, which happens. But I am, you know, thrilled that Styles and Peter had each other in this crazy, crazy world.
Yeah. You know, in the opening to this episode, even after the title sequence, I believe, maybe, I don't remember, it was so long that I actually
I felt that as well, that we weren't going to come out of this, that we were going to be in there for the whole episode.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like a bottleneck episode where it was just going to be Peter and Styles in the train station, which would have been really cool.
Yeah. And it, there's still the percentage of it was still pretty high, but I'd say more than 50%. But it, yeah, I thought that as well. Well, I'm like, wow, we're not breaking from this. We're keeping it on. We're keeping it on. We're keeping it on. So yeah, I was really excited. Obviously, we knew Ian was coming back, like, because he was, you know, at Comic Con, and you know, it was announced that, you know, he was going to be in the season, and that you know, that he and Styles, there was announced that there was going to be scenes of him and Styles. And that they, you know, that Jeff really enjoyed creating that dynamic. So we kind of knew that it was coming, this whole, like, Peter was taken, and we've been talking about it for several weeks, like, theorizing, oh, how long has it been? Like, what's the deal with him being there? It was still so good to watch, Karen.
It was, yeah. But we did get to see Beacon Hills a bit, which actually I'm really glad about, because there were some really strong moments.
None of the babies. It was a sophomore free episode. None of the little ones were there.
Mm-hmm. And it starts off with Lydia seeing the Jeep being towed from the parking lot. And she runs out there, and Scott runs out after her, and she makes Scott help her pay for it. And I loved this scene so much because, yes, Scott doesn't want to give up his money, and he's like, really, we're doing this? But also, like, he doesn't really question Lydia's instincts.
And at this point, they didn't know anything about the Jeep. Because the kids walked past it in the end of the last episode, and we were just like, Jeep! Jeep! And they didn't know what, you know, they couldn't hear us through the television, you know, they didn't know that the Jeep was significant. So it's not like they've figured out that this is Styles' relic, have they? Lydia just decides that she knows something's important about it.
And I think she understands that the reason why she's drawn to it is probably because of Styles, but she doesn't vocalize that, definitely not to Scott. And Scott is just like, okay, you're taking my last $50, like, what am I going to do now? But also, here you go. Like, he trusts his pack, and it was kind of a funny moment, but it was a really significant moment too. I mean, he's trusted his pack for a while, so it's not like this is like a game changer or anything, but it's just that acceptance of Lydia, her instincts, her powers, trusting in her, that I really enjoy seeing.
Yeah. And so even though that they, you know, once they get into the car later on, they really try to convince her that, you know, they've really gone with the whole, like, you know, we've decided that Styles doesn't exist and we're not going to keep trying this. And he goes along with it, even though that's kind of the tack they were taking. And there's a nice moment later with Malia, Scott, and Lydia where, you know, Malia's like, we don't believe in styles. We're not doing that anymore. And Lydia's like, yes. And then Scott's like, I'm on everyone's side. And I'm like, has anything ever been more Scott than being like, I'm on everyone's side?
I know.
But yeah, it's interesting that they really hammered home the whole, like, we are not going to pursue believing in styles when they know for a fact that the ghostwriters are real and making people forget things, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't know why people are doubting it so much, but clearly they can't doubt it anymore given the end of this episode, so we'll carry on.
So back in the train station, the kid jumps on the back of a ghostwriter's horse, and they go through the portal, except he's blown back and just bursts into a crisp. Like, I don't even know if there were any ashes left. Like, he is just gone. And
again, it felt like an electric force field, like the green, you know, electricity. And, like, I feel like it was, you know, like someone trying to go through, like, I don't know, like the force field around the edge of the Hunger Games, you know, like that kind of situation.
Yeah, which would make sense given how the ghostwriters operate in Riding the Lightning and all of that. So definitely still on theme there. And Peter was really hesitant to try it out. And so he's like, yeah, you can go first, kid. And he sees what happens and he's like, no, I'm out of here. Like, we're just going to find another way. And Styles is kind of mad and they get into a little argument here. And this is what I really wanted to talk about. So first off, Styles says, somebody's going to remember me. And Styles is so optimistic here. He believes in his friends so much. He's like, either Scott or Malia or Lydia, somebody's going to remember me. And I'm not saying that Styles isn't an optimistic person, but I think that he's very much a realist. And that the idea that he's just like, it's going to be fine. Like, they're going to figure it out and I'm going to get back to the real world. I just really liked seeing that positivity and that belief in his friends.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a really difficult thing for anyone, I think. That's a really difficult thing, you know, just having confidence in one's own value, having confidence that you know that you're important to your friends is easier said than done. And even though I think that Styles does obviously know, you know, his relationships with these people by now, it's still really strong thing to say, like, so blatantly, you know, that basically you know that you are loved enough and valued enough that people will come for you at any cost, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't, you know, I feel like that there are, you know, that some people, even if it was true, or that some stories are always like, oh, no one's going to find me. And then they're like, of course we came for you, you know, that kind of thing. But this confidence that, knowing his value and what his friends feel about him is really, really, really tough, I think. Not tough like hard, tough like good, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's mad at Peter and he throws a question back at him, who would ever come for you? And I just wrote in here, it's sad because it's true. Like, nobody alive loves Peter. Nobody, I mean, I think as people, as good individuals, if they had to go rescue Peter, they would, because they can't watch somebody die, you know? Mm. I don't think there's necessarily any attachment there.
He's not like a hole burning in someone's chest being like, God, I used to have an Uncle Peter, you know, like, you know?
Yeah, exactly, which is so funny. But look, Peter, we know Peter. Peter has always been cocky. He's always been sarcastic. He's always been cold and calculating and cunning. And the Peter I saw in this episode was terrified. And I found that so interesting.
He was sad, and Styles was so mean. He definitely wasn't the dominant party in that relationship with Styles. which is pretty much the same for any, for Styles in any relationship. Not so much with the girls. Most of the relationships with Styles and men, Styles is the dominant player. With the girls, not so much. But yeah, he was really like, really harsh, and it is true. And I don't know, like, Peter is, maybe that's something else about the Ghost Riders. Maybe they take people that they think won't be missed, like that, you know, are vulnerable because they won't be noticed. But I don't know if Styles was like a mistake or like, you know, oh, he's in the way, so we're taking him. You know, he's directly hunting us, so we're taking him. Exception to the rule. Maybe the people they look for originally are people that wouldn't be missed.
Yeah, I don't know. But just the fact that Peter is scared, that he's lonely, I think, like we were saying before, it's feeding into this idea that Peter could be changing, that he wants to do better, that maybe he misses that family dynamic, and this could be a turning point for him. And if it is, like, I'm definitely into it, and I like seeing him vulnerable, so we'll have to see moving forward.
Is he going to be the one weird adult that hangs out with them? Like, how are Sheriff and Chris Argent going to feel about him hanging around? Like,
oh my god.
Because he's all burnt up now. That
would be so
funny. But he also managed to get back through the portal. If he tells Scott what happened, can Scott go in?
Even if he could go in, he can't get Styles out.
Could he break down the whole thing from the inside?
I don't know. I think there's going to be another way to bring them back, and I think it's going to have to be the relics. But, so, before we get to that point, Styles finds a radio, and he, in the train station, and he starts fiddling with it. And that noise comes through the radio in the Jeep. And so Scott, Lydia, and Malia all converge on the Jeep. They break in, and they start looking around. There's no record of owner. My heart literally leaped, thinking that we were going to get the name
on the paperwork. Because I said it so many times. I'm like, they'll incidentally just find the registration, and there it is. Yeah, but no name apparently.
Right, which makes sense because we know like records have been changed and everything. So the registration doesn't have Styles' name, but it does have the Stilinski home address, which is interesting, but also like does kind of make sense because I guess it has more to do with Claudia than Styles, which is why it wasn't erased. Claudia says the Jeep was stolen 18 years ago.
I found this really amazing because it was maybe, if this is true, not that it was stolen, but if this is true in terms of this was an old family car, not like this is a clunker that Styles bought, you know, with his own money as soon as he turned 16, then maybe that's why he's so reluctant to let the Jeep die. Maybe it was his mother's car, like, you know, and that it really was like the old, you know, family car that his parents had, and they kind of kept it around as a second car, and then he ended up getting it when he was a teenager, but then it just sort of been sitting there until then. Because if they've had it for that long, 18 years ago, like, you know, when Styles was born, if they've had it that long, why, you know, in the real world, and you know, Styles is so crazy about it in the real world, like so reluctant to ever give up on it. I wonder if it was his mother's. Like, the real non-evil mother.
Yeah. I mean, that stands to reason. Which is sad. But also kind of nice. I was thinking along the same lines of in terms of the knowledge that it was stolen, quote-unquote, 18 years ago, and what that could mean in the real world and everything. But it's pretty cool. So, yeah, Lydia is there asking them about it. She's upset. She goes and sits against the wall and cries. And we see the split screen of Lydia and Stella sitting back to back. And, like, how, first of all, Lydia crying made me cry. And also just the split between the two and seeing them so close yet so far away, like, it was a lot to handle.
Yeah, Lydia's just very, I don't want to say hopeless, but it is a bit hopeless. Like, she's just so upset. They're just so miserable in other dimensions. It's just like the sad bit at the end of Doctor Who. I don't know. She's really just, I think full of grief and frustration, and I wish that she'd pick up that Claudia sucks a bit quicker. But, I mean, well, she kind of did, and then no one did anything about it. But yeah. You know what I mean?
Always listen to Lydia is turning into the new always listen to Styles.
Yeah. I don't know. Poor babies.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's sad. And so back at the train station, Peter realizes that it's a wait station. We see the lacrosse players come in. Gwen is reunited with her sister. And this kind of lights a fire under Peter's ass. Like, he realizes that nobody's going to be left in town at this rate.
Well... They have all of the whole things about the towns, right? Like the whole, you know, when he says he realizes no one's going to be left in town, and it comes up later in the episode when he's like, Kanan, like, you know, you got to figure this out. I assume this is like what happens in, like, ghost towns or something, like, as in that they take everyone, like, and it's, it ends up being like an abandoned settlement, and that he thinks that's what's going to happen to Beacon Hills.
Yeah. And I think that this relates back to, you know, him being protective of Malia, which again, like, we'll come back to and talk about that more significantly in a little bit. But I just think that this is so interesting that, like, Peter has literally never been self-sacrificing. Like, he always does something that will benefit him. And if he can put somebody else in front of the bullet, like, he's gonna do that. But he realizes that... he's got to be the one to go through the portal because he can heal. And this is where we get the Styles, let's not have a moment line, which I really liked because they kind of were going to have a moment. And, you know, Styles recognizes what Peter's doing. And even Peter recognizes the possibility that he could end up dying or that this could end up not working at all. But that risk is worth the possible outcome. And... for Peter, that is a big step forward.
Yeah. The end, do you think it is, like, solely Malia, like, or, you know, do you think it's, you know, just the general, like, I don't want to be this guy, or, like, what do you reckon?
That's actually what I really wanted to talk about, because my next point, I just put Peter is a good guy. Peter says that he may mention Styles to his friends if he feels like it.
He kind of postures that I'm going to get it. I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to get the hell away from this. And I'm doing this all for me. I'm doing it. I'm getting out for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving to go for me. And, you know, if I happen to see your little friends, I might mention you, but my plan is to get out of here and run the hell away forever. So in a self-serving way.
Styles knows all he has to do is mention Malia, and all of a sudden, like, everything makes sense. We see the flashback again. We see, like, there was that moment where, like, he sort of sniffed the air, and I was like, wait, what's going on? What was that for? Is that going to be important later? Are we going to find out what happened? And it turns out that he smelled Malia. He knew that she was there. And he almost went back to save her. I think the reason he didn't is because it was either, like, she was with her friends, so, like, she was going to get out and it was going to be fine. Or if he didn't get out right that second, then there was no way he was ever going to get out. But I still think, like, it shows how much Malia means to him.
Mm.
And so, yes, Peter is risking his life for Malia, except... he also takes Styles' keys with him. He didn't have to. He didn't even know necessarily what the significance of that was. He didn't know that that was Styles' relic or anything, but it was sort of proof that Styles exists. And the idea that he is, one, risking his life for Malia, is acceptable. I can understand that. That's, you know, it's his daughter, and I think he feels very strongly about family, even if he hasn't always been a very good part of a family.
Yeah, I mean, he was desperate. Like, when he found out that they were keeping the secret from him, you know, about having a kid, he was just like, screw y'all, I'm going to fight y'all till I, you know, get to the bottom of this. So he clearly cares about the fact that he has a kid. Like, I don't think that can be denied.
Yeah. But the fact that he takes the keys to tell them that Styles does exist so they can start working on saving him tells me that he's got a conscience. And I know, like, that can be questionable sometimes, but I really believe he does. And, like, I'm just convinced that he wants to be part of the pack. Like, he sees Scott and the way that he's a leader and wishes that he could be that way and knows that he can't. And I think I would really love to see him relegate himself to being under Scott's command, which is kind of weird considering how much older and more experienced Peter is, but, like, how great would that be if Peter was getting, like, I don't want to say reconditioned because that sounds really bad, but, you know, the pack helps him, kind of like they help Malia become a better person. Kill people, Peter. That's wrong.
Yeah, he's definitely, I don't think he's, like, invested in doing good for the greater good, but he's also not invested in, like, doing evil for the hell of it. You know, it's just, or it's like the boy, you know, that he let get fried, or that he, you know, was like, he let do the thing he was going to do and then was like, interesting, test subject. You know, he doesn't really care, like, about, like, the greater good, but he cares about the people he cares about, and he'll do right if it involves being right, you know, looking after the people he cares about. And it's just that he cares about these people who don't really care about him.
Yeah, which is very interesting. Although that whole, like, you know, human experiment thing is what got the Dread Doctors in trouble. So, you know,
maybe
that's not a great idea either. But I really like this idea that Peter has sort of come full circle. And I wrote this initially because he's burnt to a crisp again. Like, this is definitely season one Peter Hale.
Oh, yeah, and it's I was going to say, it's not funny, Karen.
It's a little funny.
Definitely, I mean, I think it's definitely meant to be a symbolic rebirth of, like,
purification.
Yeah, like, for 100% sure as a storytelling, like, device. That this is what happened to him, this is what made him twisted in the first place, and then this is what's going to, you know, this is his Mr. Rochester moment, like in Jane Eyre, like Mr. Rochester, like, because he has this terrible past, or it's not that terrible in our perception of terrible, but, like, in the whatever sensibilities of the time, you know, he wasn't allowed to, like, morally, like, in the storytelling, he wasn't allowed to marry Jane until, like, he'd had, like, basically, like, something taken away from him, so they had him, like, he got injured in a fire and he became blind and ugly and stuff, and then he was allowed to, like, he'd done penance and was allowed to marry Jane Eyre. This is, like, that for Peter. This is his, like, whole, okay, like, you've literally come full circle, and this is your chance, you know, to be atoned. And I think that from here on out, that is how it will be if we do get to see him again, if he's not dead, which I thought he might have been.
Yeah, I really like this. I mean, again, the idea that it is, like, purification through fire and that he's come full circle, I think is a really great way to lead Peter in a new direction and shows the pack that he's willing to take risks on his own life to help them, and to help Styles, and to help Malia in particular. And I think that is definite proof. I don't think they should ever forget what Peter's done, and I think they should keep a wary eye on him, but I'm hoping this is him turning over a new leaf. We hear, or we see Malia and Scott hear him roar. Malia, you know, they come running. Malia remembers him when he looks at her, and then Peter looks at Scott, and we get more flashbacks. Again, love the use of flashbacks this season. And he also remembers Peter. And both of them are like, how could I forget Peter? For Scott, you know, it's the one who turned him into a werewolf. For Malia, it's her father. And I think that this is the realization that they needed in particular, especially these two. You know, the idea that Lydia isn't there because she already believes that Styles exists.
Mm.
These two realizing that they could have forgotten somebody so significant in their lives, you know, not necessarily somebody that they like, but somebody who's had a significant impact.
Yes, of
life,
course. Yeah.
Is going to show them that, okay, this whole Styles business, maybe Lydia's right about this.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. If Peter is Scott's alpha and Malia's dad, does that make them like semi-related in some way? Sorry, I'm just like pondering the big questions here. I feel like there's a lot of ways to look at it. I feel like, you know, do you think that he was actually always planning to help them, or is it just that he got too injured that he couldn't move? Like, was he, you know, would you think if he'd come out the other side completely unscathed, he would have just taken off into the woods? Or, like, I don't know.
He took the keys. He knew what that meant when he took those keys. Yeah. He wouldn't have been able to pass that opportunity up, I don't think.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, speaking of him not being able to move or speak or anything, like, Malia and Scott take his pain away. And for some reason, this scene gave me a lot of feelings. And it's just, I think it's because we know that they don't necessarily like him, but also they can't see another person suffering. And the idea that they are willing to take on that pain, Peter's pain, of all people, like...
Yeah.
And, I mean, for Scott, like, that's a no-brainer. For Malia, that's pretty big.
Yeah, and it's also, I don't want to, like, say too much that, like, excuses his past, but, like, you know, for them seeing him like that, because I've always been of the opinion, I think Peter was always a bit of a dick, okay? Like, I think that he did some really weird things with, you know, with Derek as a kid, like, that was kind of weird, like, his relationship with Derek and the way that he kind of coerced him into turning Paige. That always confused me. I'm like, were you actually trying to help Derek? Is it just that you thought you knew better than Talia? You know, like, what was the play here? Were you trying to hurt Derek? Were you jealous of him? I don't understand. I never quite got what was going on there. But outside of that, it was always like, Derek and Peter were best friends, and la-di-la-di-da, you know, whatever. He was clearly messed up in the fire. He lost family in the fire. I think they said he lost kids in the fire. And I was always of the opinion that the full body burning of the fire, like, screwed him up, like made him insane, like, as in that, you know, that he was not better because he was that crazy, you know, and that evil, I guess, because he was still healing cell by cell, you know, and that it took a really, really, really long time, like 6 years, 10 years, however, whatever. And obviously he then did do really evil stuff, like he killed, you know, I assume he killed Laura. I don't know, did he kill Laura? Because she was, like, cut all the way in half. I can't remember. That was a long time ago. I think she did. I think he did. But I felt like that he was literally unhinged, like that he was not a real, like, not who he was when he was actually, you know, sane. And then, you know, eventually he's healed, but then he has been very nefarious. And it's all very confusing. But the point is, I feel like seeing him like that, like, you know, freshly crispy, was not a wake-up call for Scott and Malia, not an excuse, but, like, at least an understanding of, like, the amount of torture and what that could possibly do to someone, I guess, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. So, wrapping up this episode, of course, Peter gives them the keys and they go try the Jeep, and Roscoe lives, and they hear Styles on the radio. They actually hear Styles on the radio now. Scott and Lydia are there. And
again, if the radio exists, if the radio is real where Styles is, what's going on there? Like, is it like just actually a projection of brainwaves that he's kind of visualizing as a radio, or is there a real radio like going out throughout the universe on that end and this end?
I honestly, it's got to be some sort of psychic link, because
yeah,
that
so.
Radio connecting specifically to the radio in Styles' Jeep is like, the chances of that are astronomical. So it's got to be the fact that it is his relic. And maybe he's just lucky enough to have a relic with a radio in it versus everybody else who's like, this pen is my relic. Nobody will ever know that I'm out here unless I can magically make it right on its own. So, yeah, I just think that maybe they were lucky. But before we get to that, I just want to say, like, Scott and Lydia are in the Jeep. Malia is not. I think Malia is still with Peter. And so I don't think Peter's dead. I know that was kind of a question I had at the end, and Natalie, you were wondering that too. But, like, I don't think they'd bring him back for
it's
one
like,
episode.
Did Peter die? I don't know. It's really unclear.
Awful. But I think he's okay, and hopefully we'll see him on the next episode or soon after. So, yes, Scott and Lydia hear Styles on the radio. They don't, like, remember him 100%, but they recognize that it is Styles, and they kind of understand the significance of it.
That
they
he's real.
Proof. Yeah, that he's real now.
And they don't necessarily, it doesn't, not everything comes rushing back, but they're like, oh my god, someone's out there. Like, you know, yes.
And Styles asks, you know, Lydia, do you remember what I said to you? And she said, you said, remember I love you. And this, to me, was particularly tragic because I have a feeling Lydia doesn't remember Styles, but she remembers the fact that he said this. And can you imagine feeling, knowing that somebody loves you and that they've disappeared? Like, conceptually, she understands that ghostwriters make people disappear. And nobody believing that Styles is real. This is why she's been so upset this whole episode and recently, because she has this feeling, but nobody will acknowledge that that feeling is real.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable. And I don't know, it's sort of confusing to me how much was actually real or not. Like, you know, not real, how much was remembered? Because, like, if she remembered that, is it now that, like, everything's going to come back? Or is it just that she sort of only remembered it when they spoke, but had the feeling, like, all of that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I mean, Lydia's had enough problems of people treating her like she's crazy. And it's kind of like, what is it going to take, like, for people to, like, okay, no, you know she has these powers or, like, whatever. What is it going to take for her not to be, like, the town crazy, you know? And that must be so draining.
Yeah. And yet she continues on, which I really appreciate about her. And like I said, I think it was in the last episode, you know, season one Lydia, she would have done whatever it took to appear normal. Season six Lydia is just like, guys, I know I'm right. Like, you can either believe me now or believe me later, but either way, you're going to realize that I've been telling you what you need to know all along. So the final thing that Styles says is find Kanan. And we see him looking at the board throughout the episode, and it keeps zooming in on Kanan. It's one of the stops on the board, so I'm assuming it's a town. And I did look it up, and it was a former settlement in California from 1871 to 1872. And that sort of fits the ghostwriters, doesn't it? I mean, the sort of like cowboy old west kind of aesthetic, which is interesting. But you were kind of talking about Kanan as a town, as a ghost town earlier.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just thought maybe that, like, you know, if Peter recognized some of the towns on the board as past, because they were numbered, they were like numbered in different orders. I don't know. If he recognized some of them as like, oh, that's like a ghost town or whatever, you know, if he recognized them as places that used to be real or used to be normal and that are now like, yeah, completely empty or abandoned because the ghost riders have like taken everyone, if you know what I mean, like kind of like a Roanoke colony situation.
So Styles is aware, I think, of the significance of Kanan. Or maybe he just has a feeling, I don't know. But he sends them, or he tells them to find it. And I just, I don't know, it's so interesting. I can't decide if Kanan is a real place or an idea or a person. Because in the Bible, Kanan is the grandson of Noah. And I know, like, we're kind of pulling from a whole other quote-unquote mythology now, or like story. Mm-hmm. So Kanan was cursed to be the servant of servants. When I realized this, and this could be an illogical jump, but I immediately thought of the Hellhounds. We know that the Ghost Riders have a leader, and that it is their job to go out and gather spirits, or to like take people into the Wild Hunt. They also work with the Hellhounds, so if the Ghost Riders are servants themselves, and the Hellhounds are the servants to the servants,
who's the boss?
That, like, Parrish, you know, is somehow connected to this, or that we'll be seeing other Hellhounds? Or is this, like, a total stretch?
I don't know. If the Ghost Riders are servants, though, and then the Hellhounds are servants to the servants, I want to know who the boss is, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Parrish, Kanan, I don't know. I mean, it could be where the origin was, like where they came from originally, but I don't know.
Still lots of questions, getting some answers, still figuring out how the mechanics of the station work, but you know, we're getting there. So this was episode 5, Radio Silence. Episode 6 doesn't come back until January 3rd. We haven't discussed this at all. Are we recording over the break, or are we just going to wait until...
When it's Christmas, January 3rd's like pretty close up. Like, you know, most shows don't come back that quickly, so we can probably just record for 6.
Yeah.
Unless something comes up. Unless you want to do a whole episode about Tyler Posey's H&M ad, Karen.
Oh my god, it's so beautiful. We could... We could. Yeah. I wonder if he'd come on and tell us.
Oh my god.
That would be so great.
Let's make the call. Yeah, that was crazy. That was the thing that we experienced today.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay, so yeah, we'll probably just end up taking a break as well, which is pretty good.
I don't know how many other breaks they'll take after that, but then there'll be, I guess, what, like 14 more episodes till the end of the season?
Yeah.
Series? Ever? Forever?
I just got like a pain in my heart, Natalie.
Oh, Karen.
Don't do that to me.
Let's talk about the Tyler Posey ad instead. So, Tyler Posey's done a Christmas campaign for H&M. And I would like to read you Karen's texts while sending this to us earlier today. So, Karen just starts texting us. She just adds a YouTube link and then says, just pretend it's any other morning. Do what you normally do when you get dressed. We'll make an ad out of it. It'll be great. That was her context for the link that she sent, which ended up being this insane H&M ad of Tyler Posey, you know, air guitaring and ripping his pants and then having to go out and buy pants from H&M. He also has a Christmas jumper that says Merry Crustmas and it has pizza on it. And I plan to try and obtain this because I've been looking for a Christmas jumper and I really like pizza. So I think that this might be the winner. Very odd, Karen. Very odd. I don't know. Like, were they just like, we just need a dude who like kind of looks like a skater dude? Like, did he like, is this like a random bit or is it like Tyler Posey for H&M? Like, you know, like, is it... Is it actually a celebrity campaign? I don't really understand.
You know,
I need to ask someone about this. Let's make some calls. Like, look, Tyler Posey, we've known you for however many years. Fantastic star of this show we've done a podcast about for 4 years. I've seen you at, you know, every press convention for the past however long. You podcast, we podcast. We've talked about doing podcasts together before. I'm finally going to get you on H&M ad. What's going on? Like, you know,
we can talk about Teen Wolf some other time. Let's talk about Merry Christmas.
Yeah, for real. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, okay, so wrapping up this episode, I just want to say that 606 is called Ghosted.
Oh.
That sounds terrifying.
Well, it's ghost interesting. I wonder if that's like in reference to the verb ghosting, as in like the internet phenomenon. Like, have you ever heard that used before?
Oh, not in that way. Isn't ghosting also when you like don't show up to things?
Ghosting, especially on the internet, it's probably in real life too, is when you like literally drop off the face of the earth. It's like where you don't want someone, like you delete your accounts and you just basically stop existing. Like, and it's relatively easy to do on the internet if you don't have that much of an identity or whatever, or if you do it to someone specifically, like if you just drop all contact with them, you know, for whatever reason. It's a real thing. Like, so as a verb, to ghost someone means to like completely cut them off, you know, like anonymous, you know, not anonymously, but yeah, you go anonymous, if you know what I mean. You go delete all of your presence, yeah. And basically the same way that they've been deleted from the universe. So
it's relevant.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we will be back around January 3rd to discuss 606 Ghosted.
Yeah. So. Should be good.
Until then, enjoy the holidays. Enjoy the break. Enjoy
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Eat some pizza.
Yeah, I just like, given that this is our last episode probably of the year, and we have done
to do a Christmas episode.
I was just going to say, we have done our Christmas live streams before, but I don't know. I could probably pull that off. If it wasn't an episode-specific one, apparently they've changed how we do Google Hangouts. But yes, I reckon we could pull off some sort of Christmas live stream for, you know, this podcast or Not About the Weather, our other general podcast under this. Like, we'll have to see who's available. But I reckon we could pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was just reminiscing the glory that was Peter, his uncle, who used to be dead.
I know,
which is still the number one phrase in the world that will just make me, like, if you say it to me, I will just fall on the floor because it's just the best thing that's ever happened to me.
We'll have to do a reprise of that. We'll have to get a new one too.
Oh my God. We could probably do some sort of, like, day after Christmas live stream if people are around. I'd like, you know, if once I get the other computer that actually works. So I think that would possibly be a thing. But
yeah. We'll see
once
what happens.
I'm staying in the quiet house where I'm actually going to be allowed to podcast. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, see you then. Until we see you. Bye. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Oh my God, Karen, I just scrolled ahead in the dock. You are so terrible.
What?
This.
Did you hear that?
No, what was that? Thunder?
My stomach growled.
Oh, I did hear the noise. I thought it was thunder.